This podcast is brought to you by the Dutch media platform Triathlon Inside.
1, 2, 3, 4.
What is up, guys, and welcome back to Grit Grind Girona. Today we're joined by someone who helped shape the endurance culture that's made the city a mecca for pros. He's a former professional triathlete, an Aussie powerhouse, and not sure if he still is, but for sure he was a Girona local. Nick how do you say it?
You would know better than me, but Castellin.
Exactly. Yeah. I was saying it in a Dutch way.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
From being one of the first triathletes living in Girona to chasing podiums across the world, Nick built a career grounded in consistency, toughness, and I think trust in the process as well. Now, in his post-racing chapter, he's still living the grind, but just in a different gear. We'll talk about legacy, identity, and what remains when the race clock stops ticking. Because sometimes the most meaningful part of our journey begins after the finish line. This is Grit Grind Girona, and yeah, Nick, welcome.
Thank you very much for the considerate introduction. Yeah. You've put that in a very nice way.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. On the come down from a lot of busy weeks in Girona, catch-ups and things like that, but it's been great.
Yeah. So, first of all, we are at the beginning of this podcast, we are going to try and get to know you a little bit better. We were going to be doing it with some quick fire questions.
Okay.
So that's always something very fun to do. But before we do that, as I said in the intro already, because you used to be a Girona local, but you don't live here anymore, right?
No, I'm going to still consider myself a local, but yeah, it's been a couple of years since I've been here permanently. Post-career, I wanted to go back home, catch up with family, friends, and do those things that you couldn't do when you were a triathlete because you were always on. Mm-hmm. So that was my promise to myself. And the times come where I'm ready to come back to Girona and claim that Girona title again.
Yeah. Nice. All right. Well, you are here now in Girona, and we are going to be talking about that for sure, why you're back in Girona. Let's get to know you a little bit better, and let's start off with the first round of quick fire questions. You ready?
As ready as I'll ever be. Yep, go.
What is your proudest achievement in your sport?
My second in 70.3 Barcelona with a broken collarbone.
All right. Yeah, that's an interesting story for sure. I already had some questions about it, but all right.
Quick fire.
Yeah. Everybody's always like doing long answers, but
yep.
What has been your hardest race ever?
Good question.
There are so many, of course, but yeah.
There are a lot, and I have to think about that one. There's a lot in terms of either toughness of a race, but good or a good performance as well. I think it would have been Challenge Solo when I was running neck and neck with Patrick Langer for third place.
Wow.
I suffered a lot that day. I remember it. Yep.
Challenge Salau. Yeah. It's a cool race.
Challenge. What is it?
Gran Canaria. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, sorry. It's been a long time.
Also a challenge. Yeah, well, time goes fast.
Yep.
What languages do you speak?
English, Spanish, and I'm on my way to Catalan now.
All right. Cool. Nice. What is your most memorable finish line moment? What's the first thing that pops up?
The same, I think. Well, there's two. 70.3 Barcelona, where I got second to Jan, and we had a good build up to that race.
Nice.
And the other one was 9 weeks later when I'd recovered from my broken collarbone and my dad flew over just for Ironman Zurich, where I won. That was quite special.
That's for sure special, yeah. Is there one person, or has there been, you look up to for inspiration?
I think it comes from a lot of people. You have your community and your group of people that you rely on. So along the way, there's been a lot.
Yeah. What Yeah, if you still would want to do a race somewhere, what would be your dream race destination? Can or cannot be a real race right now.
We can edit this thinking out, can't we? Without considering the location, it would be more of the type of course.
Mm-hmm.
I loved anything with some hills. I loved anything in Switzerland. Even in Barcelona, they had some pretty good hills. It makes it for an exciting race.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot in the Basque Country, some short course races, sprint races, where you just ride up and down a mountain. I love that stuff.
Cool. Sounds good. What's your favorite movie?
These aren't quick fire at all. You'll have to get back to me on that one. Yeah.
All right. Really? Not anymore as a pro, probably, but is there still an event in the endurance scene you would like to do?
I'm addicted to marathons now. So anything that has a good marathon title to it, I'm keen.
Are you then also looking into like the majors? Or
the majors would be a good outcome, but yeah, destination races like we talked about before.
Yeah.
I've signed up for San Sebastian Marathon, so that'll be the next one, which is also a good race-cation.
Cool. Nice.
Yeah.
What is your favorite sport outside of triathlon, swimming, cycling, running?
Does hiking count?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. I'm a bit of a hiking camper type of guy.
Yeah.
Throw a big heavy backpack on and go up somewhere that's not accessible by car. And yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Who is the funniest athlete you knew or know?
Terenzo Bozzoni. He was quite a funny guy. I liked his sense of humor.
You used to live here as well, right?
Yeah, he used to come for summers, and it was always he was a nice addition to the environment.
Squad, yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
Nice. Are you more of an early bird or night owl?
Early bird. Yeah.
If you could visit any country tomorrow, where would you go?
Japan.
Interesting.
I love it. Nice. I love the country.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm hooked.
Have you been before? Yeah, probably then.
A few times, and I've actually been a few times since I retired.
Nice. Why?
It's easy.
Why Japan?
Well,
it's I don't say close from Australia, but it's closer than Spain, of course.
It's close to Australia. It's easily accessible, but the people and the culture, it's like the consideration and the cleanliness that and the peace that it gives me from a culture. It's a strange thing because you go to Tokyo, which is one of the biggest cities in the world. But it gives you so much, in terms of a kind of a relaxed mindset. Yeah, in such a big hustle-bustle city. I like it.
Right,
yeah.
I've never been to Asia or Australia, New Zealand, but for sure I always hear a lot of people talking about it. And
something
you got to do at one point.
Like even the food, but I just like immersing myself in this kind of this chaos, like organized chaos, I guess you'd call it. Yeah, it's a... love it. I'd go back anytime. I wanted to go for a few months to really immerse myself, but logistically maybe a bit more difficult.
So next year, Japan training camps.
Yeah. Well,
after Girona training camps.
Funnily enough, I contacted Cam Brown because I saw that he was doing something in Japan, and it's the time that I'm stopping over there, and I was like, Cam, I want to be part of this. But I think it's just more for local Japanese athletes. But yeah. It's maybe something in the future. Cool. Yeah.
Nice. Do and maybe did you prefer training with other people or on your own?
Longer answer. Since the beginning, I always wanted to have one or two core people to train with. And I found that a lot with Jan.
Mm-hmm.
And I work well better one-on-one than with a group. I've always done that. I've tried a lot of groups with Triathlon Australia and stuff, and they were fails. So, having one or two core people that you can rely on day to day was always a thing that I wanted, and I got that, and I was quite satisfied.
Nice.
Hmm.
Last question of this segment. What is one thing still on your bucket list?
As an athlete speaking?
Maybe, yeah.
You always wanted more.
Mm-hmm.
You always wanted a better performance, especially at a world championship. I never got it, and I was quite satisfied with my performance, but that... I guess that real world-class shake-up performance is probably something that would have been on my bucket list.
Mm-hmm. But is well, you're not a professional anymore. Is that still something that you are looking to, like, searching something else, or?
No, I think I'm still, yeah, we'll probably have to dive into that because that's something that I'm, you know, the next chapter and how you, yeah, where you put your goals as a post-career triathlete.
Yeah. Mm. All right. Well, we're probably going to dive into it a little bit deeper, but well, thanks for the answers. I think, yeah, from this point on, it's nice to find out, like, how did you start out with triathlon? How did you start it out? I saw somewhere that you started out when you were 8, right?
Yeah, 8 years old.
8 years old.
We had a really strong club. My dad was the president of Mudgee Triathlon Club.
Where are you from in Australia?
Mudgee, a small town in New South Wales, eastern Australia. And yeah, I just got hooked on a once a month every Sunday, we'd have the local triathlon club and I would do it and you would swim 50 meters. You would ride, I don't know, 2 kilometers and run 200 or 300. And and then I don't know how it developed, but then you just, well, you know, everyone's got their story, but you just start to want more and think this is a pretty cool thing. And then in my teens, I was like, yeah, I want to be professional.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And then it's like, yeah. And then everyone's like, are you stupid? And it just develops. Like, I have no idea, but it's, yeah, a culture that breathes from my family.
Did you for sure? Yeah, well, everybody does it when they're starting out younger. Did you, like, after your teens, your early 20s, these kind of things, I think you started out with, like, the shorter distance ITU kind of races, right?
Yeah, I, like a lot of people, you had this Olympic dream.
Mm-hmm.
Mine wasn't the strongest burning Olympic dream, but obviously with Australia having not a very good pathway to long course, I always knew I was going to go to long course, but you know, you do the short course thing because there's funding and there's money.
Why you always knew long course?
My dad, he did. Right. He's done his share of Ironman and I would go to him for races.
Nice.
But, you know, short course was where the funding was from. True. So,
yeah. And I actually think I saw, and I never knew that before, but I saw in somewhere in a wrestlers list of you, ITU World Cup in Palamos.
Yeah, it could be, yep.
But that's over here, right?
Yeah, actually.
I didn't know that they had that race over here.
Bringing back memories. Yeah, there was a race in Palamos. I don't think I would have went very well at it, but you would know better than me. But yeah, because my first introduction to Girona was coming to Banyoles with the Victorian Institute of Sport, which is a state in Australia.
Why did they choose Banyoles?
I feel like one of the high performance guys had a connection with someone there, and we were just stuck in some farmhouse in Sardinia in the back of Banyoles without a car.
What year this was around?
2013, I think. Yeah, and then I'd never been to Girona, and I just took the leap after being sick of being in groups dominated by kind of overwhelming coaches and a bit of a toxic. Without getting into detail, toxic environment. And
we're from, well, that's the thing, you know, with short distance, right? You need, as you said, for the federations for the funding and these kind of things. But you also hear from a lot of different people that, just as you're talking about, like the toxic environment and these kind of things, you know, political things. And eventually, if you want to get out of that, you got to do something else, right?
Exactly, yeah. And you have to say yes, and you have to go by the rules, and you have to follow their way, and it just wasn't my style.
But I was thinking about talking about Girona later on, but now we're here already.
I knew that would happen. It was my bad.
But 2013, that we're gonna continue on that pathway. I don't think in Girona specifically there would have been a lot of triathletes over here, or were there?
No, from memory, there was. It's a funny one because I think James and Jody Cunnamer, they had dabbled in Girona before.
All right.
But apart from that, it was just all cycling.
Yeah.
A mate of mine from back home, he was in a pro-continental cycling team, and he's like, yeah, come to Girona. And I never actually got there until he retired and then I arrived. But that was the introduction. And I just out on a whim said, I'm booking a 6-month Airbnb by myself. I said, there's a track. There's an athletics track. Yeah. There's a 50-meter pool. And cycling's obviously good because it...
You knew from running your list as well?
Yeah, exactly. But even social media wasn't that strong, right. So no one knew as much. So I was like, it's got to be better than Vitoria, even though my heart is with Vitoria in Spain, but the weather was awful.
Why Vitoria? But you used to be there as well, right?
Again, because the federation, it was the only thing they knew. And one of the head coaches had a partner who was Spanish and spoke Spanish, so they had that connection up there. But the weather is awful. Great training and everything, but yeah. So I was like, I got to go somewhere else with a bit more sun. I came here and then at the end of the season, the year before, Jan had actually done a stint here for a few weeks to test out the same thing.
We're talking, I know, but the people, they don't know, Jan Frodeno.
Yeah. And then coincidentally, I think we both arrived about the same time that year without knowing each other. And I think that was as far as I know, the first of the triathlon vibe to come to Girona. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because I think Girona is, well, first of all, in the triathlon scene, really gotten famous, especially because of Jan. But I think you were here before, right? That's what I was thinking always. You were the first, or maybe one of the first, like, real triathletes over here.
So. Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, Jan obviously had that influence over the whole triathlon community. So you can thank him. Or not
for living here now. Yeah.
But one of the early days, early memories.
Cool. Well, we're going to be talking more about Girona later on in the podcast. But let's continue to cover a little bit of your career as well. We were talking about like years 2013, 2014 right now, right?
Yeah.
And I think at that moment, as you told me, it's also the moment that you... switched over to long course triathlon, I think, right?
Yeah, so...
How was this switch for you?
I mean, as you know, as I just said, the thought of long course was always in my mind, and it was a matter of when. And 2014, it was 2014 or 2015, I'd arrived to Girona, and I'd obviously met Jan, and that relationship developed, and he had just started to dabble in long course himself. And obviously, I didn't need much temptation to try a couple of half Ironman or challenge races. Yeah. And he was kind enough to lend me a large specialized shiv.
Yeah.
At the time, and I made it work. And I'm a medium, by the way, or a small. So the seat was right down.
You already had the Superman tuck because of the length of the bike.
Exactly. Yeah. And made it work, and he actually gifted me that bike.
Yeah.
And it just developed from there. Like, I was hooked, and I had the hunger and everything to do it, and the motivation as well. So that was the phase.
Was it because you were coming from, for example, and we have just talked a little bit about it before our podcast as well. But you were talking about the funding from the federation, these kind of things, and you made the switch to go do your own thing. Was it hard at the moment, or did you work next to it, or how did it go?
In terms of income and finances, this is a really interesting topic because I never got a dollar from Triathlon Australia ever. There was this moment where they said, oh yeah, we'll support you if you come and you support one of our funded athletes. But it was like they put me up for some accommodation and I...
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but I had to pay that back. At the end of the year. Wow. True story.
All right.
Yeah. But then, and that was it. So my parents would help fund me. I would return back to Australia. I'd work as a lifeguard where you got paid good money.
Yeah.
And I would, you would either work mornings or afternoons so I could work that shift around training. It was great. And then I'd do a little bit of data entry work for an old physiology mate at the AIS. And that's how I got by until you start, getting 500 euros from a French team. And then a couple hundred euros from another race, and you just make it work, don't you?
And you get better, and you get some podiums and these kind of things, right?
Yeah. Right, and then you get like a couple of sponsors maybe that give you some clothes, and you're like, okay, well, that's money cool, I don't have to buy on clothes, spend on clothes. So,
well, that's eventually how everybody, even if they're becoming one of the best in the world or not, you know how they start out, right?
And Exactly.
If I take a look at some of the results from the beginning, you already started out with some podiums as well in the long course stuff in the 7.3s, especially in back in Australia, I think. But especially, I think in 2016, you've immediately gone to some big races to challenge Roth and these kind of things. And as well as from the results looking wise, you made your you actually was racing were racing pretty much in the front of these races, right? Did this it went pretty quickly.
Yeah,
it looks at the results though.
It does, but then 2015 was like a brewing year.
Yeah,
I didn't race a lot. I spent a lot of time with Jan learning, and obviously
he was also learning, right?
Yeah. He, I'm not sure if that was the year he got third in Kona.
Yeah, maybe.
And then obviously everything was kicking off for him as well. And I was just absorbing. I was like a sponge, you know, taking it all in. And
that's a good thing, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I think I hit Challenge Roth. And I remember being introduced to the Rizon guys, and they were small then, and they had like a little tent at Challenge Roth, and they said, "Oh, so how do you want to go?" And I said, "Under 8 hours." And they're like, I could see by the look on their face, they were a bit taken back. They're like, "Yeah, okay, this guy's never done an Ironman or an Ironman distance race, and he wants to go under 8 hours." And I was confident, but I had no idea because Jan, that was the year Jan wanted to do 7 hours 40. So I was like, surely he can't beat me by 20 minutes, you know. it was bad math.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I wore their suit. I debuted their suit for the first time and I went 8:05, I think, for that one.
8:05:03, yeah.
And I had torn my calf a few weeks earlier, a serious one. But I remember it derailed my prep a little bit, and
fifth place, Roth.
Yeah,
first participation.
It was good. Yeah, I think I got mowed down by Joe Skipper and a couple other fast runners. But as a rookie, it was a good little hit out.
Pretty fast race for a first one, right? 8:05.
It was back then, but
it now, still is. Come on,
days, yeah, I'm not sure, but. And then I kind of rolled on to...
But also that year, a couple of months later, sixth at the 7.3 World Championships.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's so massive.
I know. I flew to Australia from Spain on the Wednesday. I tried my best to acclimatize and whatever. I did the race. All my family and everyone came up to watch. And then the Monday after the race, I flew back to Spain and kind of continued work for Kona Prep. But for Jan, obviously. But... Yeah, I was blown away because I
beating a lot of big names.
Oh,
Tim Don, Lionel Sanders, Craig Alexander. Wow.
I know. I just hung on to the end of the bike. This was a bumpy bike out the back of Mooloolaba there. And I got off the bike at the back of the pack. And so I was just kind of picking people off one by one on the run. And I was like, I passed Craig Alexander. And he was one of my idols, you know, especially for my era. And then, there's Tim Don and all these other guys. And I was running with Rudy Wild, who got third in the end. And he, I was just like, this is madness, you know. And I was in this battle and just passing, Sebastian Kinley was, 20 or 30 seconds up the road. And I was like, what's going on? I've got to blow up at some point. But, race of my life.
Cool, yeah.
Mm.
Year after, 2017. First, you talked about it already. I think it's Zurich. I mean, Switzerland, it says, but it's Zurich.
Mm.
Big win.
Yeah.
First Ironman win, right? You already came the second in Barcelona. But what's the, it says the 7.3 Barcelona, you got second. Was that the one that you were second behind Jan?
Yeah. No? Yeah, and that was where I broke my collarbone.
Exactly. That's what I wanted to talk about.
Yeah.
It's also a question one of the people on Instagram asked.
Mm.
What happened?
With the crash?
Yeah. You had a crash on a bike, right?
I'm going to take two steps back because I was meant to race 70.3 Oceanside a month earlier. I slept in. I missed the flight to Los Angeles.
Oh, wow.
Right? I just signed with Canyon, okay, and I think Oakley maybe.
Okay.
And a lot of big brands. Not big contracts, but big for me. And I missed the first race of the season. The Oceanside's the season opener. So I was
they're expecting you to race.
Exactly. They expect stuff. And then I knew I was fit, but then first race of the season. So it's a local race. I remember we arrived Saturday afternoon just before briefing for a Sunday race for this one. And it was just like this chaos. It was nonstop. You get in the race and you're almost like rushing. And then I just hit this mountain where you climb up this mountain. Yeah. And I just had these.
That course was really nice.
Yeah, you know, I loved
the hills. Yeah.
And the descent is just sketchy and switchbacks and everything. And I love it because it's just who's the bravest. You know?
Yeah.
And I was riding up these hills and just leaving everyone behind, and including Jan. Mm-hmm. And we descended off the mountain, and I actually had a gap to Jan, and I went the wrong way, came back on course, and then we came into transition together. But as we're coming into transition, there's a tunnel. You go down into the tunnel, you come back out, and you hit the esplanade, and you do a quick right. And on this quick right, I overshot it, and I just had too much pressure. Like I was just, the adrenaline was too high. And I just skidded with the sand. And I'd skidded with the sand. My chain was off, Jan passed me, and I tried to put my chain on. I was reaching from the other side of the bike with my right arm because it's my dominant arm, and I couldn't lift. Like I had no force, and I was like, oh, that's weird. So I went around and I put the chain on and I rode back, and I couldn't rest my arm on the pad, on the aero bar.
And it's only 200 or 300 meters from there on to the transition.
Yeah, it was maximum, yeah. So I was like, oh, that's weird. Anyway, so I get off the bike and I start running. I was like, oh, feel it. I'm like, yeah, come on. Like, it's fine. You know, you could still run. Anyway, I was running into transition and I went to rack my bike to lift my bike up. And anyone who knows the physiology of a collarbone, it helps you lift your shoulder. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't rack my bike. Like,
that's,
I couldn't lift it.
That's not a good sign. No.
Yeah. So I was like, well, that's not good. And then I was in such a daze, and it's a funny story, because I went into transition and I was just thinking about my shoulder and what it was, that I went in and I started to turn my socks inside out, because when you wash your socks at home, you don't turn them. And I was just in this, like, I was distracted and there was all these things. And then I got out and I started running and I was like, you know, I can still run. So why can't you continue, right? The problem was the aid stations were on the right-hand side. Oh. So I had to reach across my body with the left one. Yep, yeah. And grab some water. And they're like, what's this bloke doing, you know? And I ended up running really well. I'm not sure if you got the time.
1:13?
1:13. Yeah, which was, like, for me, quite impressive. I feel like I had more. But it is what it is with the situation, and still one of my proudest personal moments. Because of everything. And
sure.
And like that day, I think Frederik van Lierde was in the race.
Frederik got fourth. Yeah. Ivan Ranja, Patrick Nielsen, these kind of guys.
Like Patrick Nielsen, he's a solid athlete as well. And like, yeah, I just couldn't believe it, you know? And it was a cool one too that day.
Yeah. Oh man, running half marathon. Well, for sure, running, but running a half marathon with a broken collarbone. And but what was happening after this race then? Because for sure, you know, half an hour after a race, oh, it's starting to hurt so much and these kind of things. You should have, or you were going for scans probably, like, soon after.
I think. Yeah, I mean, as soon as I crossed the line, obviously Jan was there and other people that I knew, but I said to him straight away, before he comes up and gives me a big hug, I said,
watch out.
My shoulder, I've done something to my shoulder. And then he's like, you know, calling people. I was like, no, I'm fine. Like, let's just get through the happiness of the race and everything, and then we'll deal with it. And obviously, I struggled to get my suit off, went for scans, and it was a clean break, which was to my favor. 2 days later, I got it pinned, and then I was back training, I think, the next day.
Yeah.
That's how motivated I was at that time. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, well, I can see it because only 2 months later, as we talked about, the first Ironman victory, first full distance. That's what your second full distance, right? After Challenge Roth?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah. On maybe I did 70 Busselton.
All right.
Ironman,
well,
Busselton,
Ironman Western Australia, you got to third as well already.
Yeah.
True,
I see
it.
Yeah.
But a victory, it's something special, right?
Oh, yeah. Because I had... Like Kenyon had sent a crew to film me when I woke up from my collarbone, and they were creating this whole storyline. They were there for all the race and the training and everything. And there was just such a whole build up. And it was such a cool moment. And I really wish I reflected better on it. Mm-hmm. At the time, when you're in the training block and the racing and the career, you don't know that they're the best times. But to me, like looking back now, they were. Mm-hmm. And my dad wanted to come over because he knew that I was fit. But I was like, look, I don't know how this is going to, my shoulder's going to hold up because, you know.
It happened, yeah, yeah.
It happened and I had it pinned and it still hadn't healed.
All right.
But obviously when you have the iron in there, the strength of it should, in theory, be fine. But, you know, you're swimming 3.8K on the rivet and you never know. And it was like unbelievable. I just had the race of my life. I held off Cam Wirth on the bike and I ran solid, but yeah, start to finish kind of.
But also a big gap, like 6 or 7 minutes or so.
Yeah,
Before some really strong guys as well.
And Ronnie Schiltnick, or I'm not sure how to.
Rudy Wild, Jan van Berkel, these kind of guys. Yeah.
But Ronnie was on a 9 or 10 win streak.
Oh, wow.
Ronnie Schiltnick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he also raced, but I think he pulled the pin for whatever reason. But the pressure was from him to, break that streak as well. And it's like all a Swiss in Switzerland.
If you, or you can also be third or fifth or tenth or whatever and get a slot, but especially if you win a race, you get a slot for Kona, Hawaii. Mm. And this was your first time going towards Kona, right?
Yeah.
Together with one of the biggest guys in the world, training together to this event. Was this like a dream becoming reality for you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
It was a very cool moment. But as I said, you didn't realize that that's as good as it gets. Even though, the results, especially for that world championship, didn't probably reflect it. But I was in the, my name was being mentioned as one of the dark horses or one of the outside favorites. And I was like at the time I was like, it's noise.
Yeah.
But when you look back, you're like, I was, even though maybe physically you were never in contention, it was like, that's cool. That's really cool. Especially for someone like me from Mudgee, New South Wales.
Yeah. But what happened? What happened in Kona? First participation. I see a DNF for you. See a 4-hour marathon of Jan. I see Patrick Lange winning. I think it was his first time, maybe. This was the year that Lionel Sanders got second, and Dave McNamee, also a Girona living guy, third. But what was this first experience for Kona like? A DNF is not something you probably come for, right?
No, and it stuck with me for a while.
All right.
That DNF.
Yeah.
If you want to dive into it, I think my race and Jan's race not related.
Mm-hmm.
For
sure, we're talking here about you.
Of course. But we did the whole preparation together Dave McNamee.
Cool.
And for me, it was a personal thing where that year, along with all the collarbone and the races and the victories and everything like that, I was going through a divorce from my partner.
All right.
And of 7 years, a British girl. And it was rough. Mentally it was rough. And I shut it all out and I went to Zurich and I won that race. But then after that, you come down off the high, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to go back to training and build up. And I remember my training never sat that well. You were never on top of it, as you probably know, where some days you feel like you are just a sponge and you absorb the training and it goes straight in and you bounce back the next day and you're superhuman. But I remember I was just chasing sessions for that block. And I also, that was probably one of the reasons I had high expectations for myself without a good training block.
Mm-hmm.
And then being mentally a little bit more vulnerable because of personal issues, then as soon as something gets hard, especially like Kona, where maybe you lose the bunch or something, day's over, you mentally crack and that was it.
That's it.
So
it's incredible that, especially in such a hard sport as triathlon, you can be conditionally super fit, but still your head needs to be there as well, right? Your mind, it's such a mental game as well.
Oh, it's more mental than anyone realizes, I think. Yeah. And as you would know, it's you have to be tough and you have to be resilient and you have to be the strong, the most headstrong person on the course because it's such a long day that, you know, overcoming any types of
obstacles
along during the course, whether you get stung by a jellyfish or someone hits you in the face or you lose a wheel that you didn't expect to, you got to just stay resilient. And that day I was not very resilient.
Looking back, looking towards like the years after, and I'm sure we can talk about every race and these kind of things, but there are a lot of like good results. Like 4th in Frankfurt, 3rd in Iron Barcelona, some podium places. Of course, 2020, nothing, no racing. We got hit with Corona. This was also actually the year I met you, 2020.
True, yeah.
I was just before COVID. I was here in Girona for like 2 months, and I had the privilege to train a little bit with you guys, especially on the swimming, and we have been biking a little bit as well. It was only 2 months, but for sure I enjoyed the period a lot. Always looking back to it. 2021, of course, again some racing, but if I take a look at the results, Kona, we were just talking about it. That was 2017, but the first thing that pops up again is 2022.
Yep.
It's 5 years later. It's a long gap as well.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Were you always chasing? Well, I think so, because you were doing all the Ironman races, but
Yeah, it's a real interesting one because that 2017 Kona shook me.
Yeah.
And I came back and you do a couple of races, a couple of podiums there, but and this is one of the most important things, I think, out of the whole triathlon journey, right? We're going to get a lesson here, right?
Yeah, for sure. I'm listening. No, Everybody listen now.
you don't need lessons. But it's never a straight line. And you always think that you're going to get better results than you do. I mean, some people get the results they deserve and they work for and they're a bit more realistic. But I was always kind of wanting that a little bit more. And things happen, like, you know, this personal issue with the divorce, but then, you know, getting back on the train and injuries happen. Mm-hmm. Like in 2020, I fractured my pelvis. I had torn calves and you're always fighting with the limit. And actually getting to the start line is the hardest part, and getting there in good form is the hardest thing I think you can do. So for me, it was a very zigzaggy type journey, and I think that's probably why by 2020, when I got my next, I guess,
shot
victory,
at Kona,
shot at Kona,
victory in Ironman Victoria, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, after that, I think the weight was lifted off, and I was like, okay, I've done it more than once, and then I could probably close that chapter.
Yeah, but it's something that must have been really special as well, I think, right? The victory in Ironman Victoria in 2022.
Mm.
Because for a lot of years you were podiuming, getting good results, but I never had the opportunity yet. But a victory is something special. And yes, especially in a city you were talking about at the beginning, Victoria in Spain, something which is really special to you, right?
Yes. Yeah. The idea of, and I've said it before, this completing a full circle. Like, I started my international triathlon career in Victoria, in this training camp that we've spoke about. And I've always had this thing for Victoria. I've loved the place and I love the Basque supporters and Spain in general. And I went there without any expectations. I was like, yep, top 10. Top 10 was in my mind. I had COVID like 4 or 5 weeks before that. But I also think that helped me because I was overtrained. And I went there, low expectations. I just had a cracking day. Like,
I can remember it was towards the end, a very, very close battle with Cameron Wurf, right?
Yes, also that. And that's what makes it quite special as well. You had to fight for it. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you...
I see it's less than a minute at the finish.
I think it was 39 seconds. Oh. 39 seconds. And he had 13 minutes off the bike. Wow. Obviously, I had struggled with the strength on the bike, and he would just did what Camworth does and just rides off, and he rode like a 401, and I was 13 minutes down, and I asked for the split, and I was like, actually, doing the math, and you know there's a long time, a lot of time to think in a marathon. I was like, okay, mathematically, maybe I could get there if I cut these amount of seconds per K. And sure enough, I just, yeah, I ran my own race because I was so far out of it that I ran right into it and caught him at 39, 40 kilometers after 13-minute deficit. And, yeah, it was just like I couldn't believe it.
Insane.
Yeah, it was – and it's quite special because the finish line there is cool.
Yeah.
You go into the – I think it's the Plaza de España or something, and, you know, there's a crowd and people, and it's just – it echoes and it's loud, and it's just – it's a really cool thing. And I don't think even winning a world championship could top – like I don't think if I won something like that, I would be any happier.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the deciding thing. As maybe why I gave it up.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's peak happiness for me. Maybe I could repeat it, but that was it.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. Nice to be hearing about something like that. But for sure, again, you qualified for Kona 5 years later, 2022. And actually, there's one thing I want to talk a little bit about in between, because I also see... your first and last as well, participation at a PGO race.
Mm.
That's, when I was thinking back, I knew it again, but there was already a question in my mind. Is like PTO, and now T100, started out 2020, 2021 a little bit, and it got bigger. But it's something you haven't experienced that much, right? What is your... look towards these kind of things?
Yeah, I think I just missed the PTO cash injection type
era,
which I think it's very, very good for the sport. I think it's great that people have the funds and they have the ability to race for big prize money and support it, I guess. I'm not sure how it works, but flights and things like that. And they have a good setup, good commentary, good professional organization. And I think it's what we need.
Yeah. Would have been would that like right now? I think there are like 8 or 9 races. It's a like worldwide series.
Mm.
Would that have been something you would have liked, or was it? It's also really tough, you know, to fly all over the world all the time. And I know from my friend Yuri, he lives in Girona, but he's now gone for like more than 10 weeks or so.
Mm.
These kind of things, you know.
I think. The traveling and the following the circuit type thing is not new to any type of triathlete, you know, whether it's World Series, short course, this type of thing. I mean, if you get paid the big bucks, I think it's also part and parcel of being in that
making it work
circle. Yeah. There's a couple of things that I'm not sold on. Is one is the exclusivity of it,
mm-hmm.
right? And having such a limited number of athletes. And also just a set distance. I mean, I know it's in their marketing and things like that.
100K,
but
yeah.
Yeah, and you have it this crossover between short course and long course. And
that's also not really anymore the case. There's now a lot of ITU guys in it and all the long course guys are a little bit out of it now, right?
Exactly, exactly. And it serves more for the short course guys than the long course one. And they're the ones that are already funded, mm-hmm. most of them,
mm-hmm.
by federations.
Yeah.
So it's almost like without having an option for a... I know it's not as spectator friendly, but like an iron distance PTO series, without that, I was just a bit filthy because I was like, that would be cool.
Mm-hmm.
Not that I had a say because I mm-hmm. finished shortly after it started, but the whole Collins Cup PTO momentum was drawn from long course races.
Yeah.
Sure. And yeah, that and the exclusivity, I liked it because without the tail enders of a race, it's difficult to compare first to last. If you have the top 20, it's great. And if they race each other all around the circuit, it's great. But also having some injections from different racing styles and, you know, an Uber swimmer, Uber biker mm-hmm. mixes things up a little bit. But I see it as a little bit more predictable. And maybe it's controversial,
maybe.
But I see it a little bit more predictable than it could be.
Okay.
Maybe.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, as we talked about a little bit later on that year, again, Hawaii. Did you do much different in your preparation that year?
It was by myself.
All right.
which was something different as well. I mean, I trained for Vittoria by myself and that went well. But yeah, I think, as we spoke about before, mental fortitude, my goal was just to go there, I guess tick the box, represent my brands as best as I could. And if I had a good race, who knows, maybe it's a top 20, top 10, who knows. Mm-hmm. But one thing that I drew from that, and it's probably, you know, a good closing thing for my career, is that I had some good brands that I developed relationships with throughout that. But that year in Kona 2022, even though I had really good momentum leading up to the race, the whole thing was funded by myself. Mm-hmm. As you would know, like, sometimes it's not worth it. And I love the race, and I've been to Kona many, many times for myself, for my dad, for a holiday, for all the things. But to put out so much money and get nothing in return, even from sponsors saying, oh, we'll subsidize, we'll give you $1,000 to travel, you know, does not happen. Well, I mean,
it doesn't cover it.
Doesn't, because yeah, there's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah. I think actually, prize money wise, only the top eight or something like that, right?
Mm.
Getting like break even out of this event.
Yeah, I mean, even top eight to cut even was, yeah, if you do it on a budget,
it's insane, right?
You know, but now with the Ironman series and everything like that, it changes things. And I think it's such a positive rivalry, the PTO and the mm-hmm. Ironman series. It's great. And I wish I had it when I was racing. But, yeah, I just didn't break even, and I was losing money. And
is that maybe that's something I think we are coming towards now, because 2023, year after, is your last year as a professional triathlete. But you were already told me you were dealing with some injuries at this moment as well. And I remember back then you were also having some trouble with finding again your watts on the bike and these kind of things. But maybe also this story you told me right now about the whole Kona, crazy money, expensive, these kind of things. Is this combination at this point, was this a little bit of like the beginning of the ending of your professional career?
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can't start to think about retirement every time you hit a hurdle.
True.
Right? Yeah. But I know that the hurdle started to get taller and taller. And financially, you know, as a triathlete, your income fluctuates. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes you're earning good money.
And prize money. Yeah,
all of those things. But it was... yeah, one of the accumulative things that started that decline, I think. But and with like bike power and everything like that, you always like you're looking as to why can't I perform as at the highest level? Because I consider myself as having been a performer, maybe not at the world class level, but enough to be competitive, right? And you look at things and you don't want to make excuses for yourself, but also you want to you want to know why you can't produce X amount of watts mm-hmm. or run at this
speed. Yeah.
Exactly. And I started looking at options, but I also think mentally it was one of those things where the motor, like you have these guys that are hungry and they're just like chomping and they're obsessed. And I went to, I think it was PTO or Collins Cup or one of these ones where these young kids, they're just like 20-year-olds, like Sam Laidlow, like 5 years ago or whatever, they're just like obsessed with it and they just don't stop. They don't shut up.
They're not only obsessed, they're super fast as well.
Exactly, because it's an obsession.
Yeah.
And I lost the obsession.
Yeah.
Like I loved it, but I was that obsessed. I remember thinking about every single component of triathlon. And then you think that you've done it before, so you still got it. But there's these guys that are hungry and fit and just, yeah, next level. So it was also a good way to slide out the side door.
Yeah. Well, it has been a pretty cool and nice career with some, I think, deep lows, but also for sure some really highs. Crazy. Nice.
Absolutely,
nice to
yeah.
look back at it a little bit, I think, as well, right?
Yeah. What's that, sorry?
Nice to be looking back at it a little bit.
It's
you
good to
you think about it much?
Still? It's good to reflect. Yeah, like you know, I would be lying if I didn't say I'd watch some of my Iron Man videos sometimes because they're good memories. And I like to have, and I wanted to leave when it, when it was suitable. And I didn't want to hate the sport. Mm-hmm. And I think if you go for too long, you overstay your time, and I still love it. And it's a good reflection. And this is probably the first time that I've actually reflected on it. And it's nice. It's really nice. Yeah.
Nice. Cool. All right. Before we move on to what you're doing now and what's coming up in the future, I want to talk to you a little bit about the city we are in right now, Girona.
Sure.
Let's do it with another round of maybe yes, maybe not quick fire questions. All right.
Okay, not my strength.
We've talked about it again, but let's freshen it up. Since when did you live in Girona? 2013, I think.
Right? 2013. Yeah. Yep.
What is your favorite place for coffee in Girona?
Espresso Mafia.
Cool.
Yeah.
Nice. What is your favorite bike loop around there?
It's hard to beat Els Angels. I don't say it correctly, but yeah. I'm a sucker for just a really easy escape from the city in 5 minutes and you're up in the mountains.
It's nice.
Yeah.
I think, over 12 years right now, you must have ridden that climb quite a lot, right?
A lot. And the other side of it, I mean, both sides, but the back end at Madre Romania side, it was rough.
Yeah.
And I remember on that old special.
What do you mean rough? The surface, the surface. Or the climate? Yeah.
Yeah. So the surface was really rough with, like, you know, roots protruding through the road. And then you'd come, like, the descent is quite steep. So you accelerate into a hairpin and you're on these rim brake time trial bikes. And it's like, oh, you know, it was just a dodgy time.
But a lot of moments you were thinking, oh, that was just
but they've tarred it since, and it's an amazing road now.
Do you prefer running on the Vias Verdes or trail running on, for example, Els Angels?
It's really hard to choose, and that's my drawback to Girona is the running. The options are endless. Like now, from where I live in Plaza Catalunya, within, it's not even 5 minutes, like 4 minutes, and I'm in the middle of nowhere from my house. And it's trail running is just endless, as you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing. So
people always, Girona, first of all, is like very known for cycling, triathlon as well now. The running is good.
Very. It's one of the best.
Have you ever been to a Girona football game?
No. People All right. will probably kill me. But it's not my cup of tea.
Yeah. Then for sure not, yeah.
Yeah.
What is your favorite restaurant in Girona? So many good options, huh?
There's a lot of good options. I'm just a sucker for an easy pizza. To be honest, I've always liked, and I take my friends who visit Girona to the tapas places. There's like Zampanzar or Chalaca. I mean, it's not somewhere you go for amazing dining or amazing food, but it's an experience.
Culture, yeah.
And it's in the old town, and this type of stuff I like. So, nice. Yeah.
What is or has been your favorite thing to do in or around Girona besides training?
I like to escape to the Pyrenees. Yeah, within 90 minutes you can choose, it's also running or hiking or whatever type of exercise, but even just, camping overnight there up in the snow, it's get that in Australia.
True, yeah. I remember you guys were also doing some bike trips and these kind of, like multiple-day bike trips. You know,
riding to Cerdanya, Font Romeo and these types of areas and, parking up and then riding home.
Nice. Mm. Is there something you dislike about the town, that city?
There's a lot of positives and a lot of negatives. I think
positives is the next question, so sure you know what's coming.
So the negatives is it's like the political Yeah, the politics in Girona is very strong.
All right.
So there's the whole independence movement and things like that, and I understand everything from that end. It's been a lot of years, and I've seen it develop. And you know, there's also these protests that you have for cycling tourists and things like that. And I think a lot of it stems from the government. And once you're here longer, you see the political structure that happens. And that is probably the negative for me.
All right.
Mm.
And the positive? What do you like the most about Girona?
The convenience, the culture, and I guess for me personally, being here for so many years, I can walk around the city and touch base and meet people that I've met a while ago, and you just bump into people because it's a small but obviously a big enough city to enjoy your own peace and quiet as well. So that kind of connectivity and walking distance and the convenience to all the training facilities.
Nice.
Mm.
Maybe you have more, but this is the last question. Do you have a hidden gem in Girona? Something people visiting Girona should definitely do or visit?
That's a hard one. I think the charm almost comes from wandering around and exploring the old town. It's, as you would know, you just, every time you see a new street and something special around the corner, you know, La Fabrica do it well, where you look up the alley and there's a little cafe that pokes its head out. But then the wall walk, La Morella, is also quite nice. You just, you know, it's right on the edge of the city and you can access it from a lot of different points. And you just have these spectacular views of the city. It's nice. Ancient and, it's easy and free. And
lovely views.
Oh, it's amazing, yeah.
Cool. Well, it's a nice place over here. It's
amazing.
Cool,
right? Yeah, very.
And you, again, came back after being back in Australia for a longer time now. And that's something that we're going to discuss now a little bit as well. Because after professional triathlon, have you always been thinking that you... want to become a coach?
No. Coaching was something that developed quite organically. I think I helped people and people approached me to coach them. And I was like, well, look, I can guide you, but I don't have that experience. And this is a while ago. And then there becomes a point where you're like, actually, I have a good amount of experience. Obviously, university educated, which helps. But unlike some people, not to stab or anything,
not fire shots.
No, I'm not directing that at anyone. But there's also people that call on you and you're like, well, actually, I can share my advice on nutrition, even though I'm not a nutritionist. Yeah. Transitions, ways to streamline the training process, because you don't realize it when you're in the professional triathlon bubble that a lot of people don't know what to do. And it's not a bad thing. It means that there's just a lot to learn. And so it developed in this way to just guide people, but then also share things that could help them without putting out too much more effort, especially for time press people. And it just developed.
Nice.
Yeah.
Cool. And whenever I follow you on your Instagram, it seems like, especially in Australia, you have like big thing going on. Some people you coach with, but also now here in Girona, it's like you came back to have camps, right?
Yeah.
That's what you did like 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. Yep. So 2 weeks ago we had the first edition, and it was something I wanted to do for a long time. Originally, it started. I wanted to start a kids, almost like a team, where I use my sponsors that I've developed relationships with and support up-and-coming kids.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a difficult market because kids are very hit and miss. And then the idea of sharing Girona with people who are passionate about triathlon, I was like, I've got to do it, because I've dabbled a little bit and I've helped a friend of mine with training camps before, and I think what he did was really, really good. But he's moved more to cycling and gravel
right.
Camps now. And I just, yeah, it just developed and I always wanted to do it, but it, starting something takes a lot of guts and it takes a lot of organization preparation. And it's like, okay, come on, I've got the time. And I've had some good help with Bewolfish, my representation, as well as a lot of friends from Girona. And it just developed into this really cool concept where we access the coolest places around Girona, whether it's restaurants, cafes, or training routes or training facilities, and just inject people into these facilities that you and I have trained in mm-hmm. for years and years. And it becomes almost a norm for us. But then you get people that even if they live in Spain or in Europe, they come here and they're like, wow, this is the best week of my life. And you don't realize it when you're here.
True. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes whenever you're on a ride or these kind of things and you actually look around and then you're like standing still at the moment, you're thinking, wow, it's actually pretty nice over here, you know? And that's, if you're here for a longer time, it's starting to get normal, but that's something. We have been coming here at the first time as well and looked around and experienced all these things, just as the people who came to your camps experienced for the first time. And it's something special, I think, as well.
Yeah, but then taking a step back and being able to share it with people is because you think, no one wants to go for a ride here or do this or run up St. Miguel. Mm-hmm. But in actual fact, it's a very high demand people, but they just don't know where to start.
Yeah.
It's easy now with a lot of online tools. But, you know, one of the things that I didn't expect to happen for my first camp was a community. And the brands backed me, even though I hadn't had any experience with training camps before, mm-hmm. except for guiding, right? And they backed me and I'm super appreciative of it. But then we made sure we rented out a set of apartments in the middle of Girona, very, very cool. And everyone stayed in the same spot, shared or not shared, individual rooms, it doesn't matter. And they just got on like a house on fire. And it was the community, like we had a group, a WhatsApp group where I would give them...
Where did these people come from? Was it Australia? Was it other places? Everywhere.
Australia, Russia, America, Vic, a Spanish guy from Vic just down the road, India, and a couple of local people.
Wow. Yeah. How big was the group?
There was 10 of us. Yeah.
Insane.
And it's a good size group. And they just, we had our organized set sessions where I would say, okay, we're training here or we have a dinner here. But then every night they would catch up and have dinner or do something. And they just, so much positivity. And this whole community, I think, stems from obviously being in Girona and this happiness that the city brings. But yeah, just, you don't realize that that's like an outcome of creating a camp like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool, right?
It's very cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
Like I sat back and I was like, wow, what a week. Like it was full on, but it was such a rewarding week and you can't explain it, but everyone just shows so much love for the group and for the work that you did because I wanted to focus on the small details.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think they all saw it and they noticed it and appreciated
it. It's, I think, also a nice thing because eventually triathlon is an individual sport, but you can't do it on your own, right?
No.
And everybody is, they want to learn from other people or they want to feel like they're part of something, right? But especially with these kind of things, with a camp, you're meeting other people, that's something people look for, I think.
Yeah. Yep. And the whole process was drawing on relationships that I'd formed over the years of being in Girona. And that's one of the unknown benefits of being here is the connections that you have with these people. For example, like La Fabrica, you know, I know that I was one of their original clients back in the day and they did me a huge favor and they opened up half an hour early in the busiest week in Tempster Floors for our guys and they had everything all set and organized and I was just like things like that make it very special, you know. So 7:30 in the morning, the whole staff was there. They had everything ready to welcome us. And that's a cool thing.
Yeah.
You know, developed through a good relationship. So.
So if you're a listener to this show and you want to have this VIP treatment at La Fabrique from Nick, but also at La Fabrique as well, you gotta come to the next camp, right? Because there's coming more, right?
Yeah. Well, obviously you judge the first one's success on if you do more of them, but you know, the next day I think I was starting to plan the next one, and it's gonna be in September this year, end of September, and we're gonna roll through the same thing, and we've got a list of learnings. The good things that we did and the bad, and just tweak it. Like, it doesn't need a lot of tweaking, but obviously there's always room to improve. And
it's a different time of year. And
Exactly. And it's just something to really look forward to. So.
Nice. Yeah. Is this combination, well, who knows how many camps you will do in the future, but for sure, like the whole coaching thing, is this something you look forward to do in the next 5 years, 10 years, maybe longer? Or is there also something else that's triggering you?
No, like, it excites me because I get to, for a few reasons, it's a good goal for me post-career because, as you know, when you're an athlete, you always have that big goal, that world championship or that 2, 5, 10-year goal, right, that you work towards. And you don't think about it because it keeps you kind of highly motivated. But then once you stop racing, it's like, okay, what next? And, you know, these, like, it's 2 years now, I think, have been, like, ups and downs, you know. Not for any big reason, but you're just like, okay, what do I do? You know, because coaching's great, but it's also not, it doesn't require all of my time. And these training camps are almost like my next project. And one of the major things is I worked with, for example, Oriol Batista, the photographer, and he captures some really cool stuff during our week. And he's the reason, like, it showcases Girona in such a way. Yeah. And we started our relationship back in 2015, 2016 when he was
always
starting.
Always some very cool photos.
Exactly. Way back then. And he did some really good work. And, you know, I didn't have a lot of money, but he would still help me and work for me. And I'd pay him €50 for a session. You know, but then you connect him to brands and we work together. And now, like, I have the opportunity to pay him what he's worth. Not that I did, but I have the potential to because, we're still developing the product. And being able to pay people what they're worth because they helped me in the past, I think is like that payback thing where as a poor triathlete, you can, you remember it. And I remember the things. So I want to, kind of give back in that type of way to Oriol and a lot of other people. So,
nice.
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Sounds good. I think we're almost coming towards the end of this recording. I think we all also have been talking quite a long time already, which is completely cool. I really enjoyed it so far. But I've got a couple of questions from our followers on Instagram.
Sure.
First one. Triathlon can be mentally brutal. How did you deal with self-doubt, pressure, and burnout, maybe, when you were in the thick of it?
I think you got to realize why you do it and what you would do if you weren't doing it. And for me, I didn't see any other option. And I was always the person where if you see an obstacle, you find a solution. And if you don't find a solution, it's like, okay, well, if I'm not racing triathlon, what do I do? It's like, well, I'd still want to train. I'd still want to, you know, push myself and be the best. So it's like, find a way to make it work. And whether you invest money or whatever you need to do to overcome that hurdle, then, you always got to remember and reflect on the reason why you do it. And I am still training two or three times a day. But without that major goal, which is, it's a really nice thing. I just still love it. Yeah.
Nice. What are you going to miss most from the professional triathlon scene?
Two things. Being really fit. Being really fit and just, you know, punching out some sessions with quality guys and backing up the next day. I think that is one of the things where you don't realize it until you should take note here because, you know, once you're at the top and you're in good form, it's a really cool feeling, hard to maintain, you know. And the second is the highs. Like the highs are, they're just addictive. Like whether it's you know, you only need a good training session. Like you would get so many kicks from just a really good run or a bike power. And then there's racing as well, which is, you know, unparalleled. But yeah.
Yeah, you just mentioned it as well. But you trained alongside some of the sport's biggest names, including, of course, John. We've talked about him. What did you learn from these guys? What like the day-to-day things? Are there what are the biggest things you can learn from these world-class guys?
Mental resilience. It's just bouncing back every single day and showing up to sessions and, yeah, knowing that as soon as you stop a session, then the pain stops. And I would do that so many times where it's like, okay, one more 400 in the pool or just 10 more minutes on the bike, because as soon as you get home, put your feet up, work's done. But there's just no cracks and they're just like pushing and they back up day to day to day, and it's just this mental resilience of, yeah, hard work.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. We didn't reflect on it that much, but you told me that, this is one of the questions, you told me that for 2022 Kona, you did things on your own.
Mm.
What happened over there?
From a performance perspective?
No, I mean, really, before that period, you were training with a lot of other guys, with Jan, but also first with Lorenzo, you told me you had a group, but you decided to do your own thing. A little more, right?
I think there was always a part of me that wanted to see what I could do when I went out on my own.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think it could be related, because it's two different scenarios, whether you train with people or you train for yourself. And when I say for yourself, I mean you train when you want in the morning and, you know, throughout the day, not based on anything else except for performance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it worked to a degree. But then there was also the tougher days where you need to meet someone and do this. And I would dabble with a couple of mate catch-up type sessions. But, yeah, that was, it was an interesting blend of individual training compared to so many years training with other people.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Do you have tips for amateurs that feel stuck and want to get better at their triathlon career?
Yeah.
A lot of tips probably.
Yeah, but yeah. There's a lot of tips, but I think, executing sessions well, even if you don't have a lot of time, like doing them properly. And that means whether you find a good hill to do reps on, or you find an uninterrupted straight to do a time trial effort.
Yeah.
Making sure that, you don't, like this consistency within training and making sure it counts, I think is the biggest thing, because most of the people that I coach, they're time pressed. And so there are really effective ways to do what you can, like what you want in a short period of time, but it's just making it count. So,
yeah. I don't know what we are talking about here, but maybe you are. Would you go on the next season of Alone?
Do you know what Alone is?
No, I don't know. That's why maybe a TV show or something.
I wonder who asked that question. But Alone is a survival TV show. It's all around the world now, where they basically drop you in some random place with 10 other people, and you have to outlast the contestants.
Wow.
Yeah, and I've always been fascinated, and it's one of the things where it's not a movie that you asked me before, but a TV show that gets me hooked. Because you have to survive, and it's like a true test. Physically, yes, you have to, you know, find food and things like that, but also the mental fortitude of being alone. And I feel like I do quite well by myself.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's an interesting one.
So you would go on the show?
Oh, I'd love it.
All right.
I had an application half filled out at the start of this year, and then I just got,
Then the camps came up.
the camp did actually, and I flew here and excuses, but I would love it.
Yeah. Cool. And last question. Do you credit the Canberra Bunch rides to your rise to the top of triathlon?
an old friend, maybe. I don't know who that is. Yeah, Canberra was it's a great place. If I was going to train anywhere in Australia, it would be Canberra. It's cold in winter, but they have a really good cycling community, and they just, yeah. We had this ride called the Hour of Power.
Okay, wow.
And it's exactly what it is. It's just a bunch of top-tier guys, not pro tour, a couple of pro tour, but really quality guys, and you just meet at 6 a.m. or 5 a.m. in the morning, dark in Canberra, and you just swap turns, and you're at the limit for 1 hour, and then you all just stop and pull off and have a coffee.
Nice.
And it's a really, yeah, and I, like, that was, you know, that was a really fun few years in Canberra.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that were all the questions from our followers. I always like to end the podcast with the following question, and that is, what is the one thing you would want to say to your younger self?
Enjoy the moments throughout the career. Because there's a really good quote from The Office, the TV show. I can't remember it, but it's basically you don't know that you're in the good moments until they've kind of passed. So appreciating the highs when you reach them in your career is probably the, and appreciating them and absorbing them is probably the biggest reflection I would make.
Cool.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, huh?
Yeah, that's just a good one. You talked about it a little bit already in between the different topics that we talked about. But for sure, yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Thanks so much.
It's a pleasure. It's great to reflect.
I really enjoyed it. A lot of cool and nice insights. If people want to follow you, follow all the things about camps or coaching or these kind of things, where can they follow you?
Yeah, Instagram. Instagram, Nick Kesterling.
Nice. Yeah. Sounds good. Again, thank you so much for coming on the show. Probably if people are going to Girona, maybe yes if you're here, or maybe not if you're in Australia, but maybe they can spot you somewhere in a cafe or whatever.
And hit me up, come up, and I know that there's a lot of people that come to Girona and they recognize faces, but hit me up and just say hello, and that's how friendships develop, isn't it? So
true.
Yeah, come say hello and have a coffee.
Cool. All right. Well, I'm looking forward to follow what's coming up in the future for you. And thanks again for coming on the show. This was today's episode of Grit Grind Girona.
1, 2, 3, 4.
This podcast is brought to you by the Dutch media platform Triathlon Inside.